This is the beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 23B, Paths of Higher Evolution Compilation, page 84. We have some 40 or 50 pages to go, but also some very challenging material. Okay. So we have been talking about the training of the masters on the third path and their supreme task of impressing their sevenfold body of manifestation via its seven states of consciousness, or seven planar states, or seven kingdoms, and through the seven centers with his will and intention. So impressionability above and the power of impression below. These are needed on this path. These are progressively imparted as the etheric body is brought into an increasing state of receptivity through the awakening of the seven planetary centers, primarily the three major centers. So we're asking, you know, how impressible is our own planetary logos. And it will depend upon the awakening of the seven planetary centers. There are all different kinds of ways to look at these seven. So he has to receive from extraplanetary sources, from other planetary logoi, and also from the solar logos, and also from the Great Bear, and also from the Pleiades. Let us say here that our planetary logos, for instance, receives from other planets, from the solar logos, from the Great Bear, from the Pleiades, and also from neighboring, I suppose there's not much to discuss, neighboring stars. Neighboring. N-E-I-G-H, neighboring stars. Which hold chakric functions in the seven solar systems. In the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. So the more the centers of the planetary logos are open, the more the centers of the planetary logos are open and developed, the more the impressibility. The masters thus in training gain experience of the methods used by the planetary logoi of all the seven sacred planets, and the training is therefore an exceedingly lengthy one. I mean, often it is the case that when you're dealing with the third aspect of divinity, the time scale is long. Time scale is long when dealing with the third aspect of divinity. We're always told that the earlier solar systems connected with the third ray last longer than those connected with the one connected with the second ray, or the shortest of all connected with the first ray. Excuse me. So it must be remembered, however, that except in dense physical incarnation and therefore conditioned by the brain and its special limitations, the spiritual man is not conscious of time once he is separated from the physical body. Well, this has to be experienced, I suppose, because even the planetary logos, as we're told, has a time-space schedule, and presumably then the solar logos does as well, and maybe the whole appearance of a universe in some exalted sense is timed. But I would just say that outside the brain and the physical body, the ongoingness of being is a great registration the ongoingness of being, is realized. Its unchangeable nature and the immortal, immutable presence is realized. And this alters the understanding of time. So what is long, what is short, you know, when you are contrasting definite durations of time with eternal duration, these definite durations all disappear into ultimate temporal negligibilities. I often talk about ultimate negligibilities, but any definite, any definite unit of time becomes an, I'll call it, ultimate temporal negligibility when compared with endless, beginningless duration. So time is the sequential registration by the brain of states of awareness and of progressive contacts with phenomena. This is one of the most important statements, and it hails in a way from the secret doctrine. Time is the sequential registration by the brain of states of awareness and of progressive contacts with phenomena. You know, when the consciousness is focused in, what can we call it, ongoing being, then the sense of sequentiality is broken. Okay. Then the, what can I call it? The tyranny of sequentiality is broken. Sequentiality. I like that. The tyranny of sequentiality. We are pretty much imprisoned by our sense of the sequential. And we realize that this is an ongoing thing. It's never, it was always so, it always will be so. And there is really all time. So the sense of all time when compared with the measurement of any sequence negates the sequence. Maybe I can write that down. The sense of all time when compared with eternal duration or the I think I'll put it that way, eternal duration. Or the sense of all time, no, the sense of all time when compared with any definite sequence negates that definite sequence. So when compared with the any definite temporal sequence negates the temporality of that definite sequence. Of that definite sequence. There is no such thing as time on the inner planes as humanity understands it, as humanity understands time. As humanity understands time. There are only cycles of activity or of non-activity forever, I suppose, forever and inextinguishably. This non-activity for masters on the third path takes the form of cyclic periods of contemplation and mental activity, followed by active periods of energy direction to impress the will of certain planetary logoi and their agents upon the council chamber of our planet in particular and upon other planets as their training is perfected. So these adepts evolve beyond the development of even the members of the council chamber in Shambhala. And their task is to impress such councils. First of their own, of the planet to which they are related to, and then of other planets as they progress. Okay. So there is no such thing as the tyranny of time. Let's just say that when one identifies as being, the tyranny of time is broken. Time serves then as no real limitation. So there are only cycles of activity or non-activity, and this non-activity for masters on the third path takes the form of cyclic periods of contemplation and mental activity, followed by active periods of energy direction to impress the will of certain planetary logoi upon their agents. So they attune to the planetary logoi and are intermediaries. These adepts are intermediaries at first between the planetary logoi and the agents of these planetary logoi. And the agents will be found in Shambhala and in hierarchy, I suppose, but especially Shambhala at first. From planetary logoi to Shambhala, then other intermediaries from Shambhala to hierarchy, other intermediaries between hierarchy and humanity. The new group of world servers is trained in this way. You rather wonder whether the new group of world servers, I don't think we can say that, but they do have a role in making sure that the continuity of will is passed from a higher source to a lower, and perhaps some feedback from the lower to the higher. It is the impulsive incentive of these masters which bridges and links between the monad on the monadic plane and the three worlds of dense expression on the cosmic physical plane. The impulsive incentive. It is an impelling energy, a pushing energy. It is their desire, it is their objective to make these bridges, you know, in a certain way. These masters are Antikarana builders, and various are the kinds of Antikaranas. In this process, the Antikarana between the spiritual man in incarnation and the spiritual triad is aided and finally constructed. So can it be said that these masters aid in the construction of lesser Antikoranos. There's something about their activity which aids this. But this is only incidental to the far greater work of relating Shambhala to all the kingdoms in nature and to other planets. So this they are learning to do in their training. As a planetary logoi later, they will have more exalted work, but it will be always relational work. There is always relational work on this path, and they are as intermediaries. Again, Mercury seems indicated. The number of masters deciding on this path is, as I said, not large. The training is peculiarly arduous and is followed. Imagine arduous. The Master M okay. Wow. I can't get that. Yeah, go back. Master M promises us nothing but endless labor. So even on that high level, there's no ease particularly. There's a peculiar ardor, or a peculiarly arduous task is followed. And when opportunity is offered to function as a planetary logos by an act of sacrifice which confines them indefinitely to the limitations of the ring pass knot of their body of manifestation, the planet. So you say it's a good thing that the sense of time is very different for these great entities. We might say this is really sacrifice. It is for this reason that Sanat Kumara, as a projection of the planetary logos and also the planetary logos, is called the Great Sacrifice. The number of masters deciding on this path is, as I said, not large. The training is peculiarly arduous and is followed when opportunity is offered to function as a planetary logos by an act of sacrifice, which confines them indefinitely to the limitations of the ring pass knot of their body of manifestation, a planet. Indefinitely, perhaps throughout the duration of an entire Mahamanvantara. We can ask how long does a Mahamanvantara last? And, you know, we are told some 311 trillion years. Some of that, of course, has consciousness outside of the solar system. And not all planetary logoi endure throughout the entire solar system. We're told, well, the Venus does, but and is home, permanent home to a principle of the solar logos, but Earth, it is implied, does not. So it's a good thing that the sense of time is completely other for these great beings. They have to be rooted in the sense of eternity. How to be rooted in eternity and still accomplish greatly and rhythmically? Well, this is the task we have to learn, to be living in eternal duration and still observe the time-space schedules required by the will of a greater entity in whom we live and move and have our being. And maybe even, I don't know, maybe even the universal logos, that point which has emerged as a ray from the absolute, maybe even that being has a time-space schedule. You know, the eternal parent slumbered for 7 eternities. Sounds like eternity has a duration, as it is used in the ancient stanzas. One is always up against the limitations of the human consciousness, which are unsuspected limitations, really. Always surprising when one realizes later what limitations have been. Wow. Okay. Now it seems that in this compilation, certain hierarchical changes have been discussed. And I wonder whether this should be discussed at this point or whether put at the end of the compilation. Basically, the idea is that now there are 9 cosmic paths. And the 6th initiation has become the initiation of decision, and so forth. So what I'm going to do here is I think I'm going to cut this and then be able to go into the archaic stanza, which relates directly to what we have just read about the 3rd cosmic path. Because otherwise it will be too easy to lose the thread. It's always easier to talk about other things, I think, than these very abstruse matters. Well, do we have maybe a better idea now about the path of the planetary logoi? About the great abstraction involved and yet the supervision of form building and the great sensitivity to soul, sensitivity to sound and color, sensitivity to psyche, and the ability to transmit will from a greater entity to lesser entities, the intermediary nature of planetary logoi. Of course, you cannot find a being in cosmos that does not have some kind of intermediary function. But the abstraction in which they can also live, the lotus sleep of the adepts who train along this path, the abstraction which can make of them silent watchers. There's so many terms here that are essential to understand and which a perfunctory treatment cannot really fathom. But at least we are gaining certain knowledge of monadic destiny. That's what this whole section is about. Monadic destiny. Whither does the monad travel through altering its point of tension and attuning? So all of this, no. Get rid of that. Our studies here are about monadic destiny. Right, and I think I can make an abbreviation of that one. I think I will. About monadic destiny. And, you know, one of the interesting things pertaining to identity is group identity versus insular identity. We human beings that are present stage seem to have a pretty insular identity, but that sense of identity is going to change greatly and expand beyond our apparent ring pass knot. And there will be a merging in spirit. About monadic destiny, And the merging in spirit, which accompanies monadic destiny. Think of it, every solar angel is a monad. But it's only solar angels in their groups that become planetary logoi. And yet each planetary logos has a sense of being one. So how can you be a many and yet have the sense of being one? This is the mysterious factor. But I think from the point of view of psyche, it is something that is real and something to be solved by the unappreciating consciousness. So we are all on a great journey of monadic destiny. We may not realize that yet. We may be very confined in our present circumstances, determined by our limited perceptions, but we are on our way. Now what I'm going to do is read this archaic stanza first, as I do. I tend to want to read it first and then read it again after pondering on it. So let's just see, it's on page 1272 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and always something has been left out. One, two, seven, two. And it is about the training for planetary logoi from archaic, it is stanza 39 from archaic formulas number 49. So it's stanza, archaic stanza 39 from archaic formulas number 49, it looks like. Archaic formulas number 49 seems to be the general collection in which these archaic stanzas are found. What a job of organizing this must be in these inner libraries. But of course, knowledge must be used. Otherwise, it becomes a burden. Knowledge is endless, and it is possible to collect knowledge infinitely and have it be but an ultimate negligibility, after all. No definite quantity, no matter how stupendously large, and larger and larger and larger, as long as it is definite, is, in the last analysis, an ultimate negligibility. This seems to be a point I wish to reassert. Perhaps I'm trying to, get it into my own understanding, the mathematics of ultimate negligibilities. Okay. The eye of Shiva opens wide, and those within its range of vision awaken to another form of sleep. They sleep, but yet they see and hear. Their eyes are closed, yet naught that passes in the greater cosmic seven is missed by them. They see, and yet they vision not. They hear, and yet their eyes, their ears are deaf. Three times the eye of Shiva closes, and three times it opens wide. Thus three great groups of lotus lords are impelled upon their way. One group is called the Lotus Lords of Deep, Unseeing Sleep. They dream, and as their dreams take form, the worlds speed on. The great and cruel Maya of the plains of sweet illusion comes into being, draws into its snare the points of unconnected light, and dims their luster. Thus is the work pursued. The eye through which these lotus lords contact the planes of cosmic vision is turned inward. They see not that which is upon the outer rim. The second group has for its name the lords of the inner lotus. These are they who sleep, yet not so deep. They wake enough to guard themselves from straying, or the secret ring pass not which rims the great illusion. They straightly stand, and through their very steadfastness, the forms are held together. The eye through which these lotus lords look out upon the great illusion is turned inward. They see but that which lieth just above them. They outward look to that vast mountaintop which pierceth through the circumscribing wheel. This mountaintop shineth with radiant light, reflected from the face of him whom the lords of worlds within our solar sphere have never seen. The third group is the strange, mysterious triple group whose name must not be heard as yet within those planetary spheres, whose color blends not with the blue in just proportion. The eye through which these lotus lords gaze out upon the cosmic path is outward turned. Its hue is indigo. The eye through which the middle group of lotus lords look up is turquoise blue, whilst the lords of deep unmoving slumber gaze in, whilst the lord of deep unmoving slumber gaze in through sapphire blue. Thus is the way of triple blue formed into one. Incredible. This latter eye, this latter aspect of the eye of Shiva, directs the other two and gathers all its energy from a far distant cosmic sphere. The two respond, and in the treading of the cosmic way, weave triple force into that path which meets the need of those who later seek to tread it. They see, they hear, they dream, and dreaming build. Their eyes are blind, their ears are deaf, and yet they are not dumb. They sound the several cosmic words and weave the seven with the 12 and multiply the 5. Thus are the planets built, thus guided, ruled, and known. Well, I'm willing to offer anyone who would like to interpret that the opportunity to do so. It seems that a certain aspect of the life of these those upon this path and of the planetary logoi is being emphasized, mostly the aspect of the different depths of sleep which they undergo, and not so much the ability to build and the work with the psychology, with vision, and with hearing and sound, although probably those factors are indeed buried here. I feel I have to read one more time this other idea here. Right. To me, it seems that this closing section on the path of the planetary logoi from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire is necessary, because it seems that the ancient stanza from the archive emphasizes this aspect most. One more path of fact of interest might here be added. This path is sometimes called the Lotus Path, as it concerns itself with the construction of the logoic lotuses of solar logoi. Well, the planetary, I suppose this means the planetary logoic lotuses. Whoops, that's not it. Let's see if we can get that back. Okay. Of the logoic lotuses of the planetary logoi, and let's call this the planetary logoic lotuses. In the great 12-petal lotus of the solar logos, there are many other lotuses combined, every one of which is multiple, is complex, and is really a planetary logoic series of lotuses, a major and minor in the planetary logoi as well. And it is in this way that we manage to make coherent the great complexity of the solar system. So this path is sometimes called the lotus path as it concerns itself with the construction of the logoic lotuses of solar logoi. The schools which prepare for this work are called in the mystic parlance of the adepts the lotus lands. And remember, what are there? There are seven main schools along this line. And are these the schools of the sacred planets? The curriculum is termed at times, the lotus sleep, as it involves a condition of complete negation, where the form side of manifestation is concerned, and an entire abstraction, thus producing a type of solar samadhi. Why solar samadhi? Why not planetary samadhi? Unless, of course, it is rising into a kind of state of contemplation within the solar logos, as if the solar logos were somehow the great head center of the entire solar system. Anyway, a kind of solar samadhi, or we might call it maybe a solar systemic samadhi. But it's a state of great abstraction. Whilst this is being undergone, the adept functions in a form or vehicle which is a correspondence upon the plane of Atma to the Maya Varupa on the plane of mind. Well, anyway, he is functioning in a state of great abstraction, and he is dreaming. And the dreaming seems to be a type of meditation and is connected with that which will emerge objectively. So we seem to be discussing what the adepts do and how they are trained and how the lotus sleep is a condition of learning, and they're in a state of samadhi. We have to realize this. Now, are the planetary logoi also in a state of samadhi, or are we simply talking about those who are learning in this way? It seems we are talking about those who are learning on this path. They enter the lotus lands, they undergo a lotus sleep, and they are functioning in a kind of vehicle upon the atmic plane, which we have sometimes talked about, and probably on the higher levels of the atmic plane as well. So that is the little paragraph which the archaic stanza seems to focus upon. So let us see what we can do with it. It is extremely abstruse. I keep on saying, well, each one of the archaic stanzas is going to be the most difficult, and following that, they will be less abstruse, but we've come upon one that is extraordinarily so. And shall I say it again? When we get to the path of Sirius and the archaic stanza describing this path, it will be easier. Well, if the trend is anything like it has been, it won't be. The eye of Shiva opens wide, and those within its range of vision awaken to another form of sleep. So it's the the eye of Shiva, of Shiva, of the adept under training. And they, sleep is always an abstraction, right? Sleep is an abstraction. They will need this cultivated eye of Shiva for the visions and, well, for the dreams or for the states of consciousness they will experience in another, in this other form of sleep. They sleep, but yet they see and hear. But they are not linked with objectivity. But what they see and hear, of course, can become objectivity. Their eyes are closed, so they do not see into the world of form with its subject-object dualism. They are not concerned with the world of effects. Yet naught that passes in the greater cosmic seven is missed by them. Now, who are these greater cosmic seven? We're talking simply here about Chohans or adepts who are on this path of training. Can their vision be so far extended that the greater cosmic seven are actually the seven centers of the seven beings who are centers in the one about whom Lama Rinpoche says? It seems a very great stretching of their capacities. What about the solar seven? The seven solar lords of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, could they be the greater cosmic seven? What of the, simply of the seven planetary logoi? Or is that too near to home? Anyway, they are aware of the process and activities and influences of greater beings, whether planetary, solar, or cosmic. The word cosmic is used for the, you know, greater cosmic seven, but we have also learned that even the planetary logos is considered a cosmic being. We must remember and I say that so often I'm going to make an abbreviation of it. One must remember, and WMR. Okay. We must remember that the planetary logoi are so often referred to as cosmic beings. So these adepts, they see and yet they vision not. Well, revelation is one thing, and the creation of vision is another. So they are seeing reality. They are not creating visions. They are not creating visions. They hear, and yet their ears are deaf, deaf to the outer forms and the worlds of objectivity. So this is a special type of training. This training involves interludes. We are learning moments of contemplation and sleep, and moments of activity. So they have to get used to the cycles which will control planetary life later. And so there is a rhythm in all. And it's not, this is not about constant activity, but about meditative interludes followed by activity and then abstraction and then contemplation or dreaming and then again reigniting activity. There's a fourfold process going on here, just like our meditative rhythm. Okay. So this training involves interludes. Yes, they see and yet they vision not. They see that which is going on in the greater cosmic seven. Now, to them who are simply adepts, Chohans, even the planetary Logoi could be considered a greater cosmic seven. Could be considered a greater cosmic seven. But the beings may be still greater than this, and we don't know what the scope of their outreach or their perception may be. They are training for some kind of acute sensitivity, impressionability, the ability to register impression and transmit impression, register will and transmit it. But as yet, they are simply Chohans, and they are separated from a being who is a planetary logos by many Mahamanvantaras. That page, I hope I do not forget, page 272 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, the distance between a master and a planetary logos in terms of Mahamanvantaras, if Mahamanvantaras mean, in that context, occult centuries. Three times the eye of Shiva closes and three times it opens wide. Thus, three great groups of lotus lords are impelled upon their way. Now, do we have three categories of adepts? Now, we have to be careful not to transition over into talking about planetary Logoi. We are talking of those in training to become planetary Logoi. So, you know, it's so easy to begin talking about what the planetary Logos could be doing or what the various Logoi could be doing. We're talking about three groups of students here. The eye of Shiva opening reveals the inner subjective worlds. The eye of Shiva closing perhaps reveals more objectivity. Let's see. The eye of Shiva opening reveals the inner worlds, which are accessed through the lotus sleep. The eye of Shiva closing closes off those worlds and perhaps, I have to say perhaps a lot, reveals objectivity. But we remember that with objectivity, this type of trainee has naught to do. We're dealing with cosmic vision, deva hearing, and the correlation of the a psychic correlation of the self and the not self. So much is given here by the Tibetan that we have to somehow remember it because it gives the different aspects of the path which we are discussing. You know, it must take it, when DK, this just occurred to me that Master DK has told us how far a master is separated from a planetary logos in terms of Maha Manvantaras? Well, there's a big hint there, if you think about it, because this means that, hint, it will take that many Maha Manvantaras for a for a master on that path to become a planetary logos. Many Maha Manvantaras. A long, arduous training. And so, in a way, I'm still wondering, are these masters in training to be separated from their sponsoring solar logos? Are they free, free-ranging within the system of the one about whom naught may be said? When the solar logos moves on to a higher level, does he take with him all his emanations? And how much freedom do those emanations have outside his own system? So I'm going to ask that question. Does a solar logos, when he moves on and up, take with him all his emanations? Or do they have freedom within a larger system? See, all of us have an emanative line of descent. And apparently, from what we've been learning, we have to retrace our steps. That would be the right path. How much freedom do we have in working outside our line of emanative descent? So these questions occur to me as we begin thinking of the possibility of becoming planetary logoi. How much freedom of expression do we have as monads outside our line of emanative descent, by which line we are expected to return? I just don't know whether there's some kind of conceptual tyranny going on in my mind, which is locking me into this thought of a pyramidal universe, much like the Parabrahm chart we have, chart 12, I guess, in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. I think there is much to that, and I'm not sure that that shows, does that show both descent and re-ascent? Well, for the time being, you know, we certainly are connected with this planet, and be a long time before we are released from it. And even when we're released from this planet, we may not be released from the solar system. And even when released from the solar system, we may be in the higher vehicles of the solar logos. And all the time, our relationship with certain groups is going to become more and more intimate. The ultimate in intimacy is fusion. I'll just say that. The ultimate in intimacy is fusion leading to identicality. I always have to deviate just a little bit to look for this process which is occurring beneath the surface. So three times the eye of Shiva closes, and three times it opens wide. The Lotus Lords, well, are they adepts anymore? Or are they somehow planetary logoi? They are Lotus Lords. They are concerned with the building of the lotuses of a solar logos, and the planetary lotuses are lotuses of the solar logos. In the great 12-petaled lotus are many other planetary lotuses. In any case, we have three groups, and we can say Are these groups functioning simultaneously? Or are they released for their activity in sequence? One group is called the Lotus Lords of Deep Unseeing Sleep. Now, are these adepts who are in training? They dream, and as their dream takes form, the worlds speed on. In other words, they are in the beginning of the process, and so it seems their, well, he's capitalizing the there, their dreams do not affect the onward speeding worlds. And as their dreams take form, because the dreams are just taking form, these dreams are not completed. But are only taking form. The great and cruel Maya of the planes of sweet illusion, what we call false attraction, come into being, draws into its snare the points of unconnected light, so these points of being, consciousness, which are what I call fragmented in illusion. They only know fragmentation, and Maya dims their luster. And as their dreams take form, the worlds speed on. So there seems to be a lack of coordination between these dreams taking form and what is transpiring in the in the outer worlds. Of course, these are simply adepts. These are not yet planetary logoi, presumably. Lotus Lords. Let's let's go here to one of the to Cosmic Fire, and let's see if we can look up the word Lotus Lords. There are several, and they all seem to be here in the archaic stanza. And I wonder whether we have earlier something about the, simply about the lotus, so many. Lotus feet, is that possible? He steps from off and his lotus feet, yes, this is in an earlier archaic stanza. But let's see if we were to look at cosmic fire, just for the word lotus. Now, of course, I'm going to do this in the... and one. So, one, two, three, four, five. We have to get to the later pages. And there are sections where the... There's so much about the lotus, it's about the egoic lotus. Egoic lotus, jewel in the lotus. And we still have to get into 1200s. Okay. Logoic lotus on the count. This is still the 1100s. Law of the lotus. Okay. Well, we're getting there now. Lotus lands, lotus path. This is it. This path is sometimes called the lotus path as it concerns itself with the construction of the logoic lotuses of Soda Logoi. And the schools which prepare for this work are called in the mystic parlance of the adepts Lotus lands, and the curriculum is termed at times, depending on the interval, the Lotus sleep. So that's 1257, and that should really be brought here into the archaic stanzas. TCF, and we've looked at this before, but we want to see how the word Lotus is used. We're trying to see who is sleeping, who is undergoing this Lotus sleep. And so far it appears to be the adepts who are on this path, producing a kind of solar samadhi or samadhi within the solar system. And it's in a abstracted state. So the Lotus Lords of deep unseeing sleep, and we have to ask, are these Lotus Lords, are these Lotus Lords those who are simply beginning their work on this path? We know it's possible to be in different stages upon such paths, and so are the ones of deep unseeing sleep not very connected with the outer objective sphere of the planet in which they are undergoing their training. Presumably they are either on the Earth under Sanakumara or on Venus later or on Jupiter undergoing this type of training. And there's also training that can be undertaken outside the solar system altogether. It strikes me, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction, and we're talking about some things which would make the average individual think we were quite mad. Thus is the work pursued. So what I'm going to say here now is that we are at the end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, number 23B, and Path of Higher Evolution Compilation, page 88, and beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 24A, Path of Higher Evolution Compilation, page 88. So we're in the middle of the archaic stanzas, doing the best we can to fathom processes in worlds which we can barely conceive, which we can only conceptualize, which we have come nowhere near touching. Worlds which are opening up to the experience of the adept who is to tread this way, or these ways. So obviously what we do here will be in a faltering sense, unfortunately, but as I said, the opportunity exists to think about it somewhat, or just to ignore it and just say, too difficult, we'll leave it for another life, or we'll leave it for someone else who knows more, or whatever. Best probably would be to leave it to the master if he ever would comment, but I sometimes think that he has made his commentary. He has said about it what could be said, or what he thought wise to say, or what he had permission to say. So he's leaving it to us to think as reasonably and as intuitively as possible about this these paths. So we're dealing then with the type of solar samadhi, which is part of the education of these great adepts on their way to becoming planetary logoi, and they are in an abstracted state undergoing a kind of sleep on the higher levels, as far as I can see, of the atmic plane. So these sleepers, or, well, sleepers in a way, not the most dignified term, but it's what comes to mind, are abstracted on the higher levels of the atmic plane and are dreaming in various depths of dreaming. Well, we'll go on shortly. So this is the end of this section, and we will be back with you when it becomes possible. We'll see you then, and we'll go on to 24 when that's possible.